You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe was a radio series featuring Raymond Chandler's private eye, Philip Marlowe. The program first aired June 17, 1947, on NBC Radio under the title The New Adventures of Philip Marlowe, with Van Heflin playing Marlowe in the early episodes. He was later replaced by Gerald Moore. You'll hear both in this two-episode sampler. The first episode adapted Chandler's short story Red Wind, which is included here. The writing is smooth, the characterization is great, and the story keeps you following. Our second episode is The Dude from Manhattan, and features Marlowe visiting his friend's dude ranch to enjoy the wide-open spaces. But first he has to deal with a wild black stallion, a tiny emerald, and a battered horseshoe. In 1948, the series moved to CBS, and by 1949, it had the largest audience in radio. The CBS version ran for 114 episodes. That series ran September 26, 1948, to September 29, 1950. And now, the adventures of Philip Marlowe, beginning with Red Wind.
For the safety of your smile, use Pepsodent twice a day. See your dentist twice a year. Lever Brothers Company presents the Pepsodent program, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Van Heflin. Pepsodent presents Philip Marlowe, Hollywood's famous private detective created by Raymond Chandler. Philip Marlowe, tough, cynical private eye of Murder, My Sweet, the sardonic, case-hardened detective of The Brasher Doubloon, The Lady in the Lake, and The Big Sleep. You've seen him in action in all of those top-flight mystery pictures. Now, in order that you may continue to enjoy this exciting mystery series, Pepsodent brings you The Adventures of Philip Marlowe on the air with a cast of noted radio players, and starring MGM's brilliant and dynamic young actor, Van Heflin. Now, families all over America have named their favorite toothpaste New Pepsodent with Irium. New fresh-tasting Pepsodent with the new cool minty flavor. It's the 3-to-1 favorite over all other toothpastes.
It's true. With families all over America, New Pepsodent is the favorite 3-to-1.
Families from coast to coast recently compared New Pepsodent with other toothpastes at home. They preferred New Pepsodent by an overwhelming average of 3-to-1 over all other brands they tried. These families, 3-to-1, said New Pepsodent tastes better, makes breath cleaner, makes teeth brighter.
Yes, families 3-to-1 say New Pepsodent tastes better, makes breath cleaner, makes teeth brighter.
Get New Pepsodent toothpaste for your family right away.
There was a rough desert wind blowing into Los Angeles that evening. It was one of those hot, dry Santa Anas that come down through the mountain passes and curl your hair, make your nerves jump and your skin itch. On nights like that, every booze party ends up in a fight, and meek little housewives feel the edge of a carving knife and study their husbands' necks. Anything can happen when the Santa Ana blows in from the desert. I closed up my office early. I got tired of reading Philip Marlowe, private investigator, backwards on the ground glass of my office door. So I opened the door and closed it from the outside and locked it and went out to get a beer before I went up to my apartment.
spell her up again, Mr. Marlin?
Marlowe.
Marlowe.
Marlin is a fish.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, you bartender. Give me another ride.
That drunk again.
What'd you expect in this business? Autograph hounds?
Make it snappy, yeah?
Be right with you, sport. I gotta draw this man a beer. Crying out loud, these stumble bums who come in here.
You got another customer, Backus?
Hey, bud. You seen a lady in here lately?
A lady?
Tall, good-looking, brown hair, a print bolero jacket, and a blue silk dress.
No, sir.
No, sir.
Nobody like that's been in.
All right, straight scotch, fast. I left my engine running out there.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
This slick-looking, sarcastic guy stepped up to the bar and drank his scotch whole. And he stopped. The drunk was grinning at him. And then, without changing his grin, the drunk swept a gun from somewhere so fast it was just a blur coming out. Made a couple of hard snaps and a little smoke curled. Very little.
All right, you other guys. Don't move. So long, Waldo. All right, don't move, you two. Oh, Waldo. But I made his nose bleed. So long, boys. Drink up.
All right, get on that phone, kid. I'll get his license number.
Holy smoke. Holy smoke.
Not too late. Drove away with this dead guy's car.
Maybe he ain't dead.
He's dead, all right.
Where's your phone? This is for the police. The prowl car boys were there in about 5 minutes. Waldo was out of business, all right. And nothing in his pockets told who he was, but he had about $700 on him. I told the cops what I knew, including about Waldo's tall, brown-haired pretty girl in the bolero jacket. It was about 9 o'clock when I stepped out of the elevator in my apartment house and almost walked right into a tall, brown-haired pretty girl in a bolero jacket, waiting for the elevator on my floor.
Oh, excuse me.
Just a minute, lady.
I said, excuse me, I'm in a hurry. Now, if you'll be good enough
Look,
to step out
Look, you better not go outside in those clothes.
Just what do you mean by telling me
this
what...
This isn't a make. You're in trouble.
Trouble?
Yeah, the cops are looking for you in those clothes.
But I haven't done anything that...
I'm in room 41 across the hall now. I never collected an etching in my life.
All right, I'll go with you. I'll go.
I got to my room and rustled up some scotch and soda and brought the girl her glass. She had a small automatic in her hand. It jumped up at me, and her eyes were full of panic. I put down both glasses on the table slowly so that I wouldn't be misunderstood. Look, sister, maybe this wind has got you crazy, too.
Don't move. Careful, don't move.
A man just got shot in a bar down the street. Before he got it, he'd been asking about a tall, pretty girl with a bolero jacket, like yours.
What did he look like, this man?
Tall, 5'11", slim, dark, dark brown eyes with a lot of glitter, dark suit, white handkerchief in the breast pocket. And he must have seen you earlier tonight to know how you were dressed. Am I getting anywhere?
He used to be my chauffeur.
You had an appointment with him, didn't you?
Why?
Listen, he asked for you, didn't he?
Yes, I had an appointment with him. He'd stolen something from me when he left 3 days ago. I was going to buy it back from him.
Why didn't you tell the police?
I couldn't tell them.
It was valuable, wasn't it? Valuable enough for Waldo to steal?
$15,000.
Oh, it's peanuts.
But it wasn't the value. It meant something to me. The man I love gave it to me, and now he's dead. He was a flyer shot down over Germany. I'll go back and tell my husband that. He probably hired you.
He did? How much is he paying me? And where is this husband of yours?
He's at a meeting.
This late at night?
He's a very important man. He's a hydroelectric engineer. I'll have you know that my husband is one of...
Skip it. I'll take him out to lunch sometime and have him tell me himself. And about Waldo. Whatever he had on you is dead stock now, like Waldo himself.
You mean he's dead? Waldo is dead?
Yes, sister. He's dead. Dead, dead, dead. Lady, he is dead.
Oh.
I scream and I'll give you two black eyes.
I'm not going to scream. Who would that be?
There's a dressing room behind that door. Hide there.
Now,
don't argue with me. Door.
All right.
I went to the door, making a loud yawning sound. The backs of my hands were wet. I opened the door without a gun. That was a mistake. I certainly knew the gun I was looking into, a .22 target automatic that had already killed one man that night. And I knew the bald head and the flat, shiny eyes and the face like a poisonous lizard. Baldy put the muzzle of his gun lightly against my throat. I backed into the room, and Baldy kicked the door shut.
You alone?
Look for yourself.
I'm asking, not looking.
I'm alone.
You and that dumb bartender saw me dust off Waldo.
What did Waldo do to you?
Who's asking?
Just making conversation.
He stooled on me on a bank job we did together. Got me 4 years in Michigan Penn. How is he?
Dead.
And still good, drunk or sober. Tell me why I came here, pal.
You heard the barkeeper and me talking. I told him my name, where I lived.
That's how, pal. I said, why?
I'll skip it. The hangman won't ask you to guess why he's there.
Oh, you're pretty tough at that, ain't you? But you're slamming off, pal.
All right, but you could get that gun out of my neck and try somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, sure. Is this better? This suits you all right?
Just so it isn't my neck.
Say when, pal. It's your party.
I leaned against the gun. The door of the dressing room showed a crack of darkness. The crack widened. I began to shake a little. The girl came quietly into the room, but there was white all around her iris. She was scared. She had her gun in her hand, but I was sorry for her. Dead sorry. She'd try to make the door scream. Either way, it'd be curtains for both of us.
You scared, mister? You worried about any little thing?
I couldn't talk. The girl floated in the air somewhere behind Baldy, and her horrified face was drifting toward us. My mouth was as cold and dry as yesterday's toast.
Well, kid, how's it feel? You ready yet? Go on, say the word.
Well, don't take all night about it if you're going to do something about it.
Why not, pal? I like this.
Well, suppose I yell.
Go ahead, yell. Go ahead.
Put up your hands!
Hey, look!
Oh.
Thanks, sister. Thanks. That buys me. Everything I have is yours now and forever.
Is he dead?
You flatter me no end, lady. I only punched him. All right, now get out of here while I call the cops down on this killer.
Yes. Good night. Good night.
Hey, wait. Leave that bolero jacket here. It marks you for the cops.
Oh, yes. Here.
Okay. See you again?
Why?
Oh, I don't know. No, I guess not. After all, who am I to be the rival of a dead flyer? I'll see that the police get Jesse James here. Good night, lady. Yeah? You mean me?
Yes. Please.
Oh, you. Again, huh?
Get in. I must talk to you.
You want to know what happened at headquarters, huh?
Yes.
Well, I went down there with the law and gave them the story. I left you out of it.
Oh, thank you.
You saved my life, so no one knows a thing about you. Well, incidentally, neither do I.
Well, my name is Mrs. Frank Bosley. 212 Fremont Place, Olympia 24596. Is that what you want?
I guess so.
Well, there it is.
And why did you really come back?
I wanted my pearls.
Pearls?
Yes.
Pearls, too. All right. Tell me about the pearls. We've had a murder and a beautiful mystery woman and a sadistic killer and a heroic rescue. Now we will have pearls.
I was to buy them back from the man called Waldo.
Well, I saw everything that came out of his pockets, and there weren't any pearls.
Could they be hidden in his apartment?
It's possible.
Waldo lived on the same floor you do, in this apartment house.
And why didn't I know him, at least by sight?
He moved in last week. He managed to get a sublet.
Yeah, great, a sort of an amateur magician on the side, huh?
It's getting rather late.
Yeah. What about your husband this hot, mysterious night?
He's still at his meeting.
You could have brought him along. You could have sat in the back seat working out a problem in hydroelectrics while...
Well, what?
Well, I didn't have any answers. They wouldn't sound cheap or just ridiculous or from the sophomore class in repartee. Had an unlit cigarette in my hand. I threw it out of the window. I took a hold of her and kissed her. She sat very still. I was shaking when I let go of her. Her voice trembled a little when she spoke.
I meant you to do that. I wasn't always that way. Only since Johnny Dalmas was killed in the war. He gave me those pearls. 41 of them perfectly matched with the diamond propeller clasp. I'd have loved them if they'd been wooden beads because he gave them to me. I love Johnny. The way you love just one time. You understand that?
What's your name?
Lola.
Lola, how did you explain a $15,000 pearl necklace to your husband?
I told him they were imitation, then I bought them myself.
How did Waldo latch onto them, what they stood for?
When my husband was in Argentina, Waldo and I'd go for long drives. I was restless and wretched because of Johnny. Sometimes Waldo and I had a little drink together, but that's all.
But you confided in Waldo about those pearls.
I was a fool.
And when your husband came back, Waldo stole the pearls and offered to sell them back to you, or he'd tell Papa, huh?
I was a fool.
And now you think the pearls are upstairs in Waldo's apartment?
I suppose it's a lot to ask.
No, sweetheart, huh? I've been paid. I'll go look. Wait here, huh? Was the gun long, Lola?
No. Well?
No.
No pearls?
No pearls.
Oh.
There was a man in Waldo's room.
A man? Who?
You know a man named Leon Balsanos?
Not by name. I don't know.
Mexican, South American, about 45, small, iron gray hair, very neat, fawn-colored suit, wine-colored tie.
No, I don't think I know such a man. Is he the one in Waldo's room?
Yeah.
What does he have to say?
Very little. In fact, nothing. He's dead.
You are listening to The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Van Heflin, with music composed and conducted by Lynn Murray. Yes, families all over America have named their favorite toothpaste New Pepsodent with invigorating irium foam. New fresh-tasting Pepsodent with a new cool minty flavor. It's the 3-to-1 favorite over all other toothpastes.
It's true. With families all over America, New Pepsodent is the favorite 3-to-1.
The Farrell family of Evergreen Park, Illinois, preferred New Pepsodent on every single count. The Farrells say New Pepsodent tastes best of all, makes breath cleaner, makes teeth brighter. On all these counts, by an overwhelming average of 3-to-1, families prefer New Pepsodent over all other toothpaste they've tried.
It's a fact. Families 3-to-1 say New Pepsodent tastes better, makes breath cleaner, and makes teeth brighter.
Remember, this is not just our opinion. It's the honest conviction of the Farrells and other families who compared New Pepsodent with other toothpaste they had at home. Get New Pepsodent, the only toothpaste containing irium. Get it for your family without delay. We continue with The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler and starring Van Heflin, who appears by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor musical Fiesta, starring Esther Williams.
I sat with Lola Barsley in her car listening to that jittery, infuriating desert wind gallop around in the midnight streets. I just told her about the Latin-looking man I'd found in Waldo's room in a very dead condition. I held her hands until they stopped trembling. Then I gave her the few remaining details. He had a gun in a shoulder holster, but Someone had strangled him before he could use it.
Someone? Waldo?
Maybe. You see that convertible coupe two cars ahead of us?
It's been there for hours. It was there before I parked here to wait for you.
Leon, the man in Waldo's room, came in that car, but according to the key containers he carried, that isn't his car.
Whose car is it? Does it matter?
Well, it belongs to a lady, according to the tag on the keys.
A lady?
Well, anyway, a woman, if you're going to split hairs. Eugenie Kolchenko. Hmm? In West Los Angeles?
Never heard of her.
Uh-huh. All right, well, you go home now, huh?
What are you going to do?
Drive that flossy convertible around, wave at my friends, impress people. You run along now. Me, I've got another date.
Yes? What is it, please?
Miss Eugenie Kolchenko?
Yes? What is it?
Did you lose or misplace a pigeon gray convertible coupe?
What are you saying?
Now, don't be alarmed. I found it and I brought it home to you.
Come in, please. It is a reward you wish. Shall we say...
Snap out of it, dragon lady. Who was he?
Who was who?
The little guy, Leon. You loaned your car to. He's dead. Who was he?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, yes.
Eugenie.
Darling, come here, please.
What's the matter, honey? Who is this man?
I came about Miss Kolchenko's car.
What about her car?
The gentleman who borrowed it couldn't return it on account of he isn't alive.
He's dead. Darling, he's dead.
Well, that's putting it more bluntly, of course.
Dead, huh?
Completely.
Who are you?
Philip Marlowe, private investigator. My card.
Mm-hmm. You told the police yet?
Never do at once what can be deferred pending negotiations. Aesop.
I might negotiate.
Oh, peachy.
What do you know, Marlowe?
A man named Waldo was shot in a bar tonight. I happen to have the inside as to who he was, and when I visited his apartment tonight, I found this Leo Balsanos dead.
He wouldn't have had $500 in 20s on him, would he?
No, but this Waldo had over $700 on him when he was killed at that cocktail bar, mostly in 20s.
Hmm.
Is there a basis there for negotiations yet?
Very well, Marlowe. I'm a married man. There were certain unpaid bills for some stuff Miss Kolchenko here had charged to my account.
But you told me I might charge to your account.
All right, so I wasn't very bright.
That might be the understatement of the decade, but go on.
I had the unpaid bill safely in my briefcase. Somehow this Waldo had a chance to steal the briefcase. I hired Leon and gave him $500 to buy back those bills from Waldo.
Instead, Waldo took Leon's dough and was forced to kill Leon in the process. And then he went out to keep another date and accidentally walked into an old pal hostile enough to blow him down.
And someone still has those bills. And I'm in for a divorce suit.
The man who shot Waldo got away in Waldo's car with your briefcase in it. Yeah, that could be. The cops caught him.
Oh. Then the police have the briefcase.
Maybe. But the police are interested in solving crime, not in tossing mud for the benefit of sensation eaters. Look, I've got a friend or two at headquarters. Let me see what I can do.
It's worth $500 to me.
Well, then that's what it'll cost you.
Well, good luck. And, thank you, Mr.
Marlowe. Philip Marlowe, remember?
My name is Frank Barsley.
Barsley. Oh.
What does that mean?
The big hydroelectric engineer?
Yeah. How did you know?
My voices tell me.
Who?
Darling, this man is manifestly insane.
It's the heat, Miss Kolchenko. It's the Santa Ana. It's the desert wind. May I use your telephone? Someday I must tell you about Ibera, Salt of the Earth Ibera, Detective Lieutenant over at Central Homicide. I phoned Ibera from Miss Kolchenko's house and told him where he could find a well-dressed cadaver named Leon and furnished a few small details. I gave Ibera time to check my tip and then I went down to see the good lieutenant and told him why I'd been up in Waldo's room, only to find Leon instead of a certain lady's string of pearls.
Pearls, eh?
Well, I thought Waldo might have them up there.
Mm. Whose pearls were they?
A lady's.
Go on.
Or they might have been in Waldo's car that Waldo's killer drove away in.
Yeah.
What, yeah?
They might have.
Also a batch of unpaid bills charged to the account of a certain Frank Barsley?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, now, the police aren't interested in domestic scandal. They want to prevent or to solve crime, right?
So?
So, I've got $500 for the police fund if those pearls and those bills are returned to their rightful owners.
Quit your kidding.
No, no, it's a valuable necklace.
Yeah. There's your necklace.
That's it. 41 pearls, perfectly matched diamond propeller clasp. That's it. That's the one.
Take it away, Morrow.
On the level?
Just tell me straight what it's all about, I ask.
Sure, sure. Well, this Waldo was blackmailing a wife with the pearls and her husband with the bills. A guy by the name of Barsley. Well, Barsley sent Leon to get the bills from Waldo. Instead, Waldo killed Leon, then stepped out and happened to get shot by that guy at the bar. Now, if Barsley's name stays out of the paper, I get $500. And that goes to the police fund.
We'll keep him out.
Well, now, I'm not in this case for money. I just want to get back the bills and the pearls.
As you say, Morrow, the police aren't in business to sling mud.
Well, you can deliver the pearls to the lady yourself if you like.
No,
she
no,
lives
no,
at...
No, 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 Morrow. You better take them to her. You see, except for the diamond propeller clasp on them, they're phony.
Phony, but...
All but the clasp, Morrow. All but the clasp.
Stared at Ibarra. So the flyer, Johnny Dalmas, the great lover, had given Lola a string of fake pearls. Well, I didn't know how to tell her, but I called her up and told her to meet me at the Beachcombers at 2. I was going to slip her the bad news slowly.
I'm glad you asked me to meet you here, Mr. Marlowe. See, I had to have someone to talk to.
Go ahead. Go ahead, talk. I'm listening.
Now, Mr. Marlowe, now more than ever, I must have those pearls.
Why? Money trouble?
Oh, no, no. It's just that everything's gone wrong. This morning, my husband told me we're to separate.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lola.
But if I had Johnny's pearls, it would be a link with the past and with Johnny. And all he meant to me. It's how a woman feels, Mr. Marlowe. I wouldn't blame you for not understanding.
Maybe I do, though.
So please, Mr. Marlowe, please. You'll try to find my pearls.
Lola, look,
isn't all of them, any part of them, any single smallest one of them, it'll be Johnny's.
Look, will you meet me here again around 4 o'clock?
I'll be here.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. There was only one earthly decent thing I could do. I took Lola's glass pearls to a jeweler and I had him take off the diamond clasp and put it on one of those strings of so-called simulated pearls that they sell you for $3, tax included. Then I went back to keep my 4 o'clock date with Lola at the Beachcombers.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, anything new?
Yes, the police found some pearls in Waldo's car.
They found my pearls?
No, not exactly.
Not exactly?
Well, Waldo was getting set to gyp you, Lola. He had the diamond clasp of your necklace attached to a string of cheap imitations. And then he sold the real pearls.
Oh, how... Oh.
These are the imitations here.
Yes. But it is my clasp. The clasp is real.
Is that all right?
Yes, it's the clasp that Johnny Dalmas gave me. Of course it's all right.
Well, that's swell.
Thank you so much, Mr. Marlowe.
Forget it.
I won't. Not ever. Well, is this goodbye?
Yeah, I think so. You'll never get over Johnny Dalmas, Lola. If anybody ever bothers you again, though, well, let me know. Name's Philip Marlowe. I drove almost to Malibu and then I parked and walked out on a rock cliff jutting into the Pacific Ocean. Then I reached in my pocket and dug out the string of Bohemian glass pearls that Lieutenant Ibarra had found in Waldo's car. I cut the knot at one end and slipped the pearls off one by one. One by one, I flipped them into the water. The gull swooped down on them and then flapped up again, screaming indignantly. The phony pearls had fooled Waldo and Lola Barsley, but they couldn't fool a seagull. I said to myself, to the memory of Johnny Dalmas, just another four-flusher. I listened a while to the wheeling seagulls. All at once, I realized that the wind had died. The Santa Ana had blown itself out. The red wind was done. It was over.
You have just heard Van Heflin starring in the first of a new mystery series, Raymond Chandler's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, brought to you by the Lever Brothers Company, makers of Pepsodent. Have you tried, have you tasted the new Pepsodent toothpaste? Its lingering minty flavor is so fresh and inviting, families prefer it by an overwhelming average of 3-1 over all other toothpastes in a recent nationwide test. They said new Pepsodent tastes better, makes breath cleaner, and makes teeth brighter. Remember, new Pepsodent gives you more invigorating irium foam. It sweeps dulling film away. No wonder it's the 3-1 favorite with families all over America. Get new Pepsodent with irium for your family right away. Tonight's story on The Adventure of Philip Marlowe was based on Red Wind, written by Raymond Chandler, creator of Philip Marlowe, the screen's most famous private detective. Was adapted for radio by Milton Geiger. Heard with Van Heflin was Loreen Tuttle as Lola Barsley. And this is Wendell Niles inviting you to listen again next week at this same time to another exciting story on The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Van Heflin with a distinguished cast.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And now for the second Philip Marlowe episode, Dude from Manhattan.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn. This time it was going to be a vacation in the wide open spaces. But a black stallion, a tiny emerald, and a battered horseshoe met a 24-hour delay. It could have been worse, because to the dude from Manhattan, they meant death.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of mystery, comes his most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy as we present The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Dude from Manhattan.
Every so often, life in the city seems to boil down to nothing but noise and concrete. Where all a deep breath does for you is to pack more exhaust fumes into your lungs. And the nearest thing to nature is a mangy sparrow pecking survival out of a dirty alley. So when I got a long-distance call from an old friend inviting me to spend a week in the great outdoors at a ranch he'd just bought near Rattlesnake Mountain, I snapped at the chance. Inside an hour, I was rolling down the highway toward San Bernardino. And 120 miles later, at 5 o'clock, I turned in under a big arch of gnarled cedar that spelled out Rainbow Ranch. But the layout beyond was about as primitive as a dry martini. A ranch house the size of Union Station was backed up by blue tile swimming pool, paved tennis court, and a semicircle of bungalows with all the rustic charm of a Hollywood motel. I drove on in slowly as a broad-brimmed hat, red gabardine shirt, hickok belt, and hand-tooled boots bounced out the door and ran toward me. It was my host, the ex-hotel man, Harold R. Lawson.
Oh, rascal. How are you, boy? I am sure glad you could make it. File out, and I'll show you around.
Hey, what is all this, Harold? From your phone call, I expected a shack with oil lamps, a wood stove, and at least a few head of cattle.
What, you mean I didn't tell you? Why, this is a guest ranch, Phil. Guest ranch. The best in the West.
Oh, brother.
Oh, and incidentally, don't call me Harold.
No, huh?
Bad atmosphere for the dudes. The name's Buck now. Buck Lawson.
Buck? Oh, no.
Oh, I got a real spread here, Phil. Real spread. 14 big cabins, string of 30 horses, stables down there.
Hello there, Buck.
Oh, hello, Buck. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Howdy, folks. Sure is. Mr. and Mrs. Doverman. He's a big van and storage man in L.A.
Oh.
As I was saying, Thunder!
Who's coming? Red Rider?
Not funny, Phil. Not funny. Look. It's Thunder. Oh, that black devil, he's loose again. That horse will kick the fence down if those fools don't hold him.
Hey, that's some animal. He's a beauty.
Yes, and a renegade. A skittish, temperamental bronco with anybody but Virgil Sawyer.
Yeah? Oh, they got a rope on him now. That'll hold him, huh?
Not for long. Sawyer's the only hand I've got who can get close to that stallion. And he's leaving tomorrow. Blast it.
How come?
Well, frankly, that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah, Phil. Wait a minute. I came up here for a rest, not a job.
I know. You'll get it, Phil. You'll get it. But since you're here, I figure you could sort of keep your eyes open for me.
Lawson, it's a dirty trick.
No, Phil, please. I'm expecting trouble, and bluntly, I can't afford it.
Mm.
Every cent I've got is tied up in this ranch. A serious scandal could ruin me. And you're just the one who can keep that sort of thing from happening.
Okay. So it's the old hotel business on horseback. How does the Sawyer mean trouble?
Well, there's a couple here from the East, the Mortons. He's a top silk wholesaler from New York and rich.
Oh?
And that kind means everything to me, Phil. But his wife, Judy, an ex-dance instructor with Arthur Murray back East, is, well, she's bored stiff out here. And the upshot of it all is that somehow...
Mm-hmm. Somehow she and your cowboy Sawyer started making eyes at each other, and the husband got nasty about it, huh?
How did you know that?
Yeah, well, it's standard, like a B-picture plot.
Well, anyway, they came to blows this morning. Maybe Virgil's innocent, maybe not, but I can't take a chance, so I fired him. Ordered him to pack and get off the place by tomorrow.
Well, that's that. What are you worried about?
Plenty. Sawyer's a proud man, Marlowe. He was furious. He threatened to get even. I'm not sure he means it, but if he does, well, that's what we have to look out for.
Now look, Buck, you built me into coming up here, and I got a good notion to turn around...
Wait. Hold it, Phil.
What's the matter?
You see that couple going into cabin number 8?
Yeah?
That's the couple I'm talking about. The Mortons, Paul and Judy.
Cabin 8, huh? But don't tell me. Just let me guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right, Phil. You've got number 7.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Number 7 it is. I'll be seeing you, Buck. I walked up to number 7 and waited for the boy to show up with my bag. Then I started to unpack, but stopped when I heard a riot next door. At that point, sprawling Rainbow Ranch was just a horizontal tenement. Nothing more.
Well, let me point out a few... Now what are you doing?
Shutting the window. Isn't it bad enough to make a fool of yourself in private? You have to make a public scene as well?
The voices rattled on for a few minutes, then dwindled off into a long and golden silence that said maybe a peace treaty had been signed. But then a door slammed to number 8, so I peeked out. It was Morton. And from the look on his face, I knew the peace treaty was nothing but an armed truce. I followed him to the big lodge and into the bar, and when he sat down, I took the stool next to him.
Well, what'll it be, gentlemen?
Scotch and water, no ice.
The same, with ice. Well, Mr. Morton, I guess that brands us as dudes, huh? Bourbon's the only drink out west.
I wouldn't know, I'm sure.
Oh, it's a fact. Hey, that's a handsome ring you got there. And the initials are the same as mine. Those stones are emeralds, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah. There's supposed to be 4 of them. One's missing, I see. Is that an emerald, too?
It was. Happens to be my birthstone.
Oh.
Here you are, gentlemen.
Oh, fine. Allow me, Mr. Morton. There you are.
Oh, thank you, sir.
How'd you lose it? Stone, I mean.
I don't know. It happened several months ago, and in any case, it's no concern of yours. Now, if you don't mind, I'd just as soon be left alone.
Oh, well, that's too bad. Here I was hoping I'd find out all about the silk business.
The silk... What do you mean by that?
Oh, just conversation. You are in that business, aren't you?
Of course, but... Hey, who are you, anyway?
Name's Marlowe.
And just why are you prying into my personal affairs, Mr. Marlowe?
Because I got a little free advice for you. Cool off before you start the kind of fire you can't put out, huh?
So that's it. That cowboy Sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Marlowe, now you're getting too personal. I suggest that you mind your own business. Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to lose my temper that way. Good night.
Yeah, it's bound to be.
Charming, isn't he?
Well, Mrs. Morton, where'd you come from?
I was standing over there watching. My husband has all the social grace of a tarantula.
Well, maybe you should have looked closer before you made the leap.
Oh, that's the wonderful thing about him.
Yeah?
You're not apt to like Paul much when you first meet him. But once you get to know him, you hate him.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's funny.
It's not supposed to be. I've been living with him for 6 months now. so jealous it's unbelievable. He wouldn't leave me in New York, oh no. Insisted on dragging me out to this dust bowl with running water. Why a ranch, I'll never understand. He doesn't know one end of a horse from another.
Well, with his aptitude, he'll learn. You know, it might be. He figured you two might get back together if you had a chance to relax in the open, Mrs. Morton.
Mm-hmm. So he said. However, we weren't here 10 minutes before he accused me of getting romantic with that leather-faced cowboy. Does that make sense?
I don't know. Both gentlemen are justified. You're lovely to look at.
Somebody ought to remind my husband. His idea of welding a marriage is to spend all his time playing gin with that Doberman.
Who?
Doberman, the van and storage character from Los Angeles.
Oh.
Which, of course, leaves me saddled with his wife, Carrie. Now, there's a cute personality for you if you happen to like neurotic parrots.
So, what with the desert, the dame, and gin rummy, Virgil began to look pretty good, is that it?
Excuse me, folks. Care to order another drink before
yes,
dinner?
Yes, I would. And I'd like it over there, alone. Make it Manhattan, bartender. Strictly Manhattan. And make it double. Mr. Marlowe, good night.
No, I'm not so sure. It was almost dark when I left the bar and headed down to the bunkhouse where the working personnel of Rainbow Ranch called home. The casual clutter of rumpled cots, scattered pulp fiction, and dusty boots gave it the only sign of authenticity I'd seen in the entire place. But aside from that, it was empty. Then a noise from outside brought me around the building to the back, where I ran up against 6½ lean feet of solitary cowboy, with his hat shoved back on his head, pitching horseshoes. He was out of uniform for a flashy dude wrangler, which left him in a faded blue shirt and Levi's that fitted his lanky legs like a pair of bent stovepipes. He spotted me and stood there swinging a battered horseshoe in each hand while I walked up to him.
Hello.
Hiya, Sawyer. A little dark for horseshoes, isn't it?
Little.
Hey, you're good. Good at horses, too, huh? I understand you're the only man who can handle that black stallion, Thunder.
Yeah.
What's the secret?
No secret. Just have to treat him right. What's on your mind, mister?
The fact that you're leaving tomorrow.
I reckon you better keep out of my business.
Now, look, Sawyer, it takes at least two to make a fight. And fights are poison to Buck Lawson.
So?
I don't like to see my friends poisoned. Now, why don't you take it easy, huh? Lay off. Keep your nose clean.
I don't know who you are, mister, but I'll tell you this anyway, seeing as you're so interested. I'm leaving here tomorrow, all right? And I'm going to square up with a couple of folks first before I go. I got a raw deal here, and I'm just not the kind to take it laying down.
What do you mean, raw deal? You're a big boy now. You ought to know better than to get yourself all involved.
I'm not much for conversation, fella, but I'm going to say something real plain so you'll be sure to sell me.
Oh! By the time I got myself untangled and back on my feet, the strong, silent fugitive from the old Chisholm Trail was gone. However, my original theory that it takes two to make a fight was still valid. So I decided to find Paul Morton and spend the rest of the evening close to him. His cabin was dark, but I remembered the running gin game he had with the big van and storage man. So I went down the line to the Doberman cabin and knocked. It was Carrie, the perennial dude, who galloped up to open the door.
Howdy, stranger. Come on in and set a spell. Our latch is always stringing out.
Well, I sure do. Thank you, ma'am. My name's Marlowe.
Orville, this is Mr. Marlowe.
Howdy, Marlowe.
Howdy.
Hope you'll excuse the looks of the place. Our box of extra clothes just arrived from town. Carrie's been unpacking it.
Sit down there, Mr. Marlowe. They're mostly old things. Just throw them on the floor.
Oh, thanks. But really, I can't stay. I'm looking for Paul Morton. I thought I might find him here.
Morton? Say, there's a nice chap. Met him day before yesterday for the first time. And won $90 off him in gin already. Haven't seen him tonight, though.
Orville was out looking for him himself just a few minutes ago. Weren't you, dear?
Why, yes. As a matter of fact, I was.
You didn't locate him, huh?
No, I didn't. You know, he seemed to be all upset this afternoon. Couldn't keep his mind on the game. I thought I'd have a little chat with him to calm him down some.
Orville's a whiz at that, Mr. Marlowe.
Oh, it's not me, Carrie. It's this country. I don't see how a man can keep trouble in his mind on a place like this ranch, Marlowe.
It can happen, believe me.
Poppycock, why, son, there's something about this open land round here that cleans out a man's head and his heart, too.
You sound like a travelogue.
I mean it. A few more days of this and mortal forget there ever was such a thing as a cash register. Yes, sir. Give this untamed countryside a chance and it'll cure anything.
Marlowe. Yes, well...
Marlowe, come here quick!
What was that?
Wasn't the call of the wild, Mr. Doberman.
Lawson, what's the matter?
Bill, come on, down to the stable, hurry! Something terrible's happened!
Lawson?
One of the boys told me. Heard thunder raising a terrible fuss. Come over to check, but by then it was all over. Mm.
Give me the lantern, Harold, will you?
Here you are.
Holy smoke. It's Paul Morton, all right. He's been trampled to death.
Oh, it's a ghastly accident. And it's all my fault, Phil. I knew thunder was dangerous, and I didn't get rid of it.
All right, take it easy. Well, There's a lot of questions to be answered before anybody takes the... Hey, wait a minute. Look at this. Here by the gate.
Oh, it's just a horseshoe. Stables are full of them, Phil.
Yeah? Not like this one. Look at it. It's all battered up.
Well, all right, it's battered. What's that supposed to be?
Nothing yet. It gives me an idea. Because the last time I saw one of these, it was being pitched at an iron stake behind the bunkhouse.
What are you getting at?
Well, the chances are at least 50-50 that Paul Morton's death was no accident. It was murder.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, perfect musical settings for a Sunday before the 4th will be yours tomorrow afternoon. The Symphonette, a half hour of fine orchestral music, and the Choral Airs, a half hour of brilliant vocal music, are regular Sunday afternoon features on most of these same CBS network stations. And now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Dude from Manhattan.
Paul Morton's death, something worse than an accident. Lawson's mouth fell open and the muscles in his face jerked as his eyes moved slowly from me out to the now quiet black stallion in the corral, who somehow or other seemed to sense the death at our feet. Then as the trembling man's lips silently formed the word murder, he gestured for me to help him carry Morton's body out of the stable. After that, he looked at the dead man's broken face once more, said he was going to call the sheriff's office, and hurried away. A minute later, Judy Morton stepped into the small circle of light that surrounded what only a short time ago had been her husband. But except for a thin line of perspiration above her lips, she was no different than when I'd seen her last.
I just passed Buck on my way down here. Told me my husband was dead.
Did he tell you anything else, Judy? About how Paul died, I mean?
No. It was a stallion, wasn't it? An accident?
I doubt it.
Why, Marlowe?
Well, one thing, this horseshoe, too close to the body.
But this is a stable.
And this a horseshoe that's been used exclusively for pitching at a stake in the ground. Here, look at it. And remember, Cowboy Virgil's favorite sport is horseshoes. Besides, what reason would your husband have for coming down here at this hour in the first place? He wasn't too crazy about horses, you know.
No, but he was about me. Let's move a little away from here, Marlowe.
Cigarette?
No, thanks. I'm not coming apart at the seams because it isn't in me. I hated Paul. Hated him with all my heart, Marlowe. I'm down here only because he pleaded with me, begged me to talk to him once more, to listen to reason.
About what?
About the decision I came to less than an hour ago, which was divorce, unconditionally.
I thought you said you came out here to try to patch things up.
I did. I also said that we weren't doing a very good job of it. Then, tonight, a little after we left you at the bar, Marlowe, I got my hands on the lever I needed to pry myself loose from that jealous maniac. It was the knowledge, Marlowe, that my late husband was crooked.
Soap business?
Yes. While he was drinking his dinner, I went to one of his suitcases for an aspirin.
Found what instead?
At least 3 dozen samples of the best silks made without any importer's or manufacturer's name. And underneath that, $200,000 in cash. I know enough about the silk business to fill in the blanks, Marlowe.
All of which comes under the heading black market, huh?
Yes. I added what I had found to the fact that this dude ranch he had insisted on was close to Los Angeles. Close enough for him to run off and conduct his purchasing while I thought he was communing with nature or playing gin with that Mr. Doberman. Then I had him.
Mm-hmm. You also had a divorce, no strings attached, right?
Exactly. Blackmail to get rid of your own husband. Pretty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, at least with this accident or whatever it is, it's no longer necessary.
No. Now, Judy, only 2 things are necessary. One, the location of Virgil Sawyer, and the other, you in your own cabin where I can ask you some questions later.
Why do you want to ask me questions?
Well, I might be making a big mistake, baby. But it might be that Virgil and you are out for the $200,000. You know, honey, that man in the saddle might like money, too. I'll see you. When I started back to the bunkhouse, the only place I knew of that might give me a lead on the strong, silent horseshoe pitcher, I realized that tagging Paul Morton's death a murder was one thing, proving it was going to be quite another. And when I was there and the place was empty without even signs of a hasty departure, I was sure of it. But not by intuition, as was the gentleman standing in the open doorway watching my every move. Orville Doberman, champion of the wide open spaces, didn't believe that a clean-cut cowboy could be guilty of anything more unrefined than spitting on a pot-bellied stove.
Marlowe, I think you're crazy. Buck told me about your finding that horseshoe next to Morton's body and the conclusion you jumped to from there. You're being very hasty, boy, and that's dangerous, and that's the reason I'm here. I don't believe in necktie parties.
Necktie
parties? A man's got a right to a fair trial.
Hey, hold it. Nobody said anything about lynching your hero.
Huh?
I want to find Sawyer so that if I'm right, we can save the state the time and trouble of a manhunt. But since you brought it up, Vigilante, don't scramble for conclusions too quickly yourself. I happen to have a little more to go on than the relative position of a horseshoe.
Not that idle gossip that's going around.
The same. But at the moment, it figures two ways. Virgil's unhappy enough with the status quo to liquidate the city slicker. Or Virgil and the squaw light out after a clean start the hard way. Choose one.
Nonsense, Marlowe. In either case, and especially the stupid suggestion that the girl and Virgil Sawyer are in cahoots. That I can't believe.
Well, sentimental reasons I can't either. Besides, Judy Morton found out enough about her husband within the last hour to make murder for freedom's sake very unnecessary. She learned he was a crook, Mr. D, if you can stand the disillusionment.
Oh, no, Marlowe.
Yes, and shady dealings in silk. Judy didn't go into details about it, but I gather she found out enough to make him sit up and take notice. And that brings us right back to Virgil, boots, saddle, and all.
Yeah, it does, sort of.
And we'll argue the fine points later, but now, Mr. Doberman, if you want to make sure that everybody gets a square deal, get close to Judy's cabin and stay there. Sentry duty, your object.
All right.
And if I'm wrong about the cowboy, you've done nothing worse than waste your time. Goodbye. I spent the next 20 minutes talking to cowhands, guests, miscellaneous hired men, any and everybody who might have been able to say he went that away of Virgil Sawyer. With no success. And to make matters worse, when I'd given that up and was on my way back to the lodge to help Lawson wait for the sheriff, I found myself being paged,
howdy.
Western style, of course, by no one else but Mrs. Carrie Doberman, the capital D in Dude Ranch.
Howdy.
Howdy, ma'am.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah.
Mr. Marlowe, look at this. Look at what I've found. I've struck it rich, you might say, much like the old rustlers.
The old rustlers, Mrs. Doberman, stole cattle.
Oh?
Yes.
Oh, yes, so they did. I guess I meant those panhandle men. You know, gold is where you find it. Anyhow, look, it's a precious stone. Small, but nevertheless precious.
Mine while digging for worms, no doubt.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe, you're teasing me.
Yes.
You know very well that this is a polished stone. Funny thing, though, is where I found it. Shall I tell you?
Oh, please. Please do, Mrs. Doberman.
Well, I was just unpacking those clothes that Orville has sent up from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Some slacks and things like that. And, well, when I started to hang a pair up, this fell out of one of the cuffs. And then... Now, I wonder how a little old emerald like this ever got there.
Well, it was probably mice, Mrs. Doberman. Emerald? Let me see that, quick.
Well, yes, of course. But believe me, Mr. Marlowe, it can't be very valuable, I'm sure.
I'm not.
What are you talking about?
Murder, or a reasonable facsimile thereof, and a girl named Judy Morton, if I don't hurry. Goodbye and bless you, Mrs. Doberman. You talk too much, but now is the right time. As I ran for Judy's cabin, I didn't know any more about the whys and wherefores of Paul Morton's death than I had before I made small talk with Mrs. Doberman. But I did know that unless Lady Named Luck and I were on the same team, the Rainbow Ranch was due for a second corpse. When I was close enough to the rough oak door, numbered 8, and Orville Doberman, whom I'd asked to stand guard, was nowhere in sight. The full impact of that responsibility sank into where the wingtips on the butterflies in my stomach were scratching at my hip pocket until I moved in still closer, and there in the light of a single lamp that was halo enough for me, I saw the girl from Manhattan, nervously lighting one cigarette from the end of another, but more important, very much alive. I didn't bother knocking.
Marlowe, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here? Honey, I'm uncrossing fingers and toes alike. You know, they've been that way since I realized that I opened my mouth too wide, too soon, which put you right smack on what used to be known as the spot.
Oh, well, that's the way it happened.
Yeah, that's the way it... Now, look, Judy, baby, you can't know what I mean yet. It's Doberman, honey, the gin player with all the moving vans. He's the one your husband was buying that black market silk from. I didn't know that until a few minutes ago, which was after I told him where you could be found and that you knew an awful lot.
Oh, which, Mr. Marlowe, he thanks you and warned you not to move.
Yo.
See what I mean, Phil?
Yo, sure, I see. You know, it's funny, Doberman, when I was outside and didn't see you around, or did see that Judy here was still in good health, I figured that either you had decided to sit tight until you knew exactly how much she did know or that you already started to run. Yeah, this I didn't count on.
And this, Marlowe, should point up what I said earlier about your jumping to conclusions. It's dangerous.
Handling hot silk is child's play.
It has been for me for 20 years, Marlowe. For your husband, Mrs. Morton, it was much more. That's why I had to come to you like this.
That's why I had to know if his stupidity went so far that even you knew of me.
You shouldn't have bothered Mr. Doberman. I didn't.
No, but you see, Marlowe did. That leaves me even.
Correction, Doberman. Paul Morton's dead. You're out in front.
I didn't kill Morton, Marlowe, and neither did Virgil Sawyer. I saw it all, my friend. So I can tell you that the man who killed Paul Morton was Paul Morton himself.
Suicide? Are you out of your mind?
No, not suicide, Mrs. Morton. Merely a plan for murder that backfired. The intended victim was you, his wife.
Oh, no.
Keep talking, Doberman.
Why, Marlowe? I'd rather keep you guessing.
I wouldn't.
Duck, baby!
Oh!
My
shoulder!
Now the man said keep talking.
I can't. I'm hit.
You'll be again if you don't.
Sawyer, no.
Stay out of this, Marlowe. Come on, Doberman. I'm not going to ask you again.
Oh, no.
I'm not even going to let you fall until you tell the rest.
Okay, okay. I'll tell you. I overheard Morton ask him, some go to your place first, Sawyer. Pick up one of your horseshoes, and then he went to the stables near the Black Stallion's stall. The horseshoe in his hat. Oh, Sawyer, my shoulder.
Come on, Doberman, you're not finished yet.
I figured that he was going to...
To knock his wife out, leave Sawyer's horseshoe where it will be found, then half make it look like an accident that would fool nobody, huh? What went wrong, Doberman? Why didn't it work?
Well, he approached Thunder from the right side instead of the left. The horse got excited, kicked out, and caught him. The dude. Now, let go, Sawyer.
Sure, Doberman. With pleasure.
It was a slow but steady 2 hours of first aid and questions and answers mixed with a San Bernardino deputy sheriff who couldn't quite get over it before Orville Doberman was on his way to a hospital that featured barred windows. Mrs. Doberman, a complete innocent, was on her way back to Los Angeles. And Buck Lawson, Judy, and I were in the bunkhouse, watching Virgil Sawyer watch a pot full of water boil for coffee, ranch style.
Well, you know, you can't ever tell, Marlowe. This whole thing might have just the right effect.
Oh.
Put the ranch on the map, I mean. After all, it was a genuine 100% cowboy who saved the day for us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that's not right, Buck.
Huh?
It was Marlowe here. I only followed him. Coffee's ready, folks.
Oh, yeah, that's good, for me. Good. Let's go.
What did make you go up there, Mr. Marlowe?
Oh, a little precious stone, Virgil. An emerald that once fell out of Paul Morton's initialed ring.
But, Marlowe, that happened a long time ago, 3-4 months. It was just after Paul had returned to New York from Los Angeles.
Yeah, and negotiations with Doberman. You see, honey, it was Mrs. Doberman, really, who found the missing emerald tonight and a pair of slacks that Orville had sent up here.
Then that was proof that Paul must have been with Doberman in Los Angeles before. Yet they claimed to have met for the first time here at the ranch.
Yeah, that's what they claimed. That plus what you told me, Judy, made the man with the moving vans it. And, hey, Virgil, that coffee's hot. But it's good. Well, anyway, since I told Doberman where you were and that you knew your husband had been dealing in black market silks, he took his cue accordingly.
Yes, and fortunately, you, yours. Well, that makes it two people who tried to kill me tonight. My husband and his partner.
Seldom is heard a discouraging word.
Oh, fine.
And the skies are not cloudy all day.
Good night, gentlemen.
Virgil Sawyer made good coffee and lots of it. So another hour went by before we finally broke up, and I was outside smoking a cigarette and strolling toward my cabin in the start of a vacation that already had been postponed too long. But halfway there, I stopped at the sound of raised voices ahead of me. A man and a woman were arguing violently, and a little away from them, on the porch of my cabin, watching the battle of the sexes with consternation while he waited for me, was Buck Lawson, mine host. I turned quickly and hurried back to the bunkhouse where I knew Virgil Sawyer would put me up for the night. Where I knew that early the next morning, I could sneak off, find a quiet, cool stream, and fish. A coyote high in the hills someplace said I had the right idea.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Dinelli, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Charlotte Lawrence, Bill Johnstone, Bill Lally, Herb Butterfield, D.J. Thompson, Lou Krugman, and Jack Carrington. The special music is written by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
I went from a mansion in Bel Air to a cheap flat in Southgate, looking for a girl with a secret, who a man in a pork pie hat, a wise-cracking secretary, and a fat corpse didn't want me to find, but who I found anyway, because of the quiet number.
Three highly individual, highly entertaining mystery adventure shows stand high among the top shows on CBS every Sunday. The Green Llama, Call the Police, Sam Spade. Go adventuring with them every Sunday when they come to you over most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS network stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thanks for joining us at Radio Days, the old-time radio show sampler, where we feature the best from the golden age of radio for your enjoyment. And you can request more episodes from the shows you like. Just email us at 1001storiespodcast@gmail.com and tell us which shows you like best, or suggest some we haven't played yet. Be sure to tune in to our other three 1001 shows, namely 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries, 1001 Classic Short Stories, and 1001 Stories for the Road. Radio Days airs every Wednesday and Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be back soon.